The other day, I accepted an invitation from a listener to sit down, have a cup of tea and a bite, and talk about what's happened in his family. He wants to be known by the name of Tony, and he told me a tale across the table that left me very distressed and feeling somewhat, well, inadequate and useless, I might say. Tony wants his story to be heard by a wider audience, and I'm more than happy to provide the microphone for it. And good morning to you, Tony.
Good morning. Thanks, John, for having me.
Let's start at the beginning. Tell us what happened.
I guess the best place to start would be nearly on 3 years ago now. My wife and I received two distressing calls from two of our older sons.
You have how many children?
Four.
Altogether?
Yeah. Altogether. We've lived in our community for over 30 years. Like all parents, we've always wanted to do the right things, and we're very connected in the community, a loving family, grandparents who adored the grandchildren in that respect. But we, on this particular day, we received two distressing calls separately, one to me, one to my wife, and it was basically a screaming coming over the phone, and there was the mention of he's going to shoot me. I grabbed my wife, we jumped in the car, and we went to this place, which happened to be my parents' house, about 10 minutes away. We got there, and as we were rounding the corner, there was over 30 police cars, there was helicopters. It was like a scene out of some sort of movie, and there were the tapes that they put across the road. Well, I disregarded the tapes, and I drove through them, and I could see my younger of the two older boys lying on the ground.
He's how old?
At the time, he was approximately 25. As with anything like that, of course, what you're hoping for is to see some kind of movement, because he was just lying there. And so we had no idea whether he was dead, alive, or whatever.
Were there police nearby?
There was over two dozen police.
No, nearby, specifically him on the ground?
Oh, yeah, there were police literally covering the whole street.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it was literally like a scene out of some sort of movie. I saw a movement in him, which sounds stupid, but it was kind of a relief. At least he was alive, but we still had no indication of what condition he was in.
Were the police attending to him at the time?
The police were standing around. At that point, there was no ambulance. At that point, I jumped out of the car. The police tried to stop me from going to him, but I decided that I would do so anyway. My wife was really distressed, of course, that kind of thing.
Your other son?
My other son, there was no sign of him, but the police that were in the area were standing outside the gate of this particular home, and they had their guns drawn. And so, of course, we were fearing the worst. I guess I summed up the situation by recognising that he had fired the gun. And
so one of your sons had shot one of your other sons?
Correct.
And all of this is because?
They'd had an altercation. Both of them had been for some time using ice. And, we had tried virtually everything. We had plenty of times we'd had the CAT team around. We'd had police officers around. We'd had smashed up rooms, smashed up house. We had tried everything in our power. We'd been in rehabilitation places, all sorts of things that had gone on, none of which really addressed the issue with regard to it. And there's plenty that I can say about that particular thing.
So a prosperous family, thoroughly Melbourne middle class,
yep,
find their world turned upside down because of this particular substance and the,
yep,
the grip it's got on your two eldest children.
That's right. And these young men had not had any bad upbringing or anything else like that. I don't think we're terribly bad parents. I think we're average parents. We had always given them the opportunity to speak freely with us and communicate with us.
Good educations and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, Tony, I mean, Let's avoid some of the issues here, but not avoid others. One of your sons is now in jail. The other one is not. One of them, the one in jail, is no longer using. The one who's out is...
Possibly still.
May still be using.
Yep.
And your frustration, the issues to do with ICE use and take-up in our community have been discussed now for years. But your specific frustration is directed at what part of what's going on?
I think it's important to say too, John, that... I'm not saying that what the authorities are doing is wrong. I'm not saying they're being bad or wrong or otherwise. What I'm saying is that the current way that we deal with this doesn't work. It just doesn't work. A quick example about that is that if you have a young person, as we did, who is going through what psychiatrists describe, I'm not a psychiatrist, describe as a psychotic episode, which is drug-induced, you don't have a person who you can reason with. And as a parent, you are terrified, number one, of what the consequences may be. If you push them too far, they may go outside the house and cause problems, both to themselves, harm to themselves or others. If you call the police, and our young men and women of the police force are people who, are like us, have fear, have concern, and if they turn up and somebody is highly agitated, they do have to defend themselves. So the fear for us is they might get shot, they might get hurt, all sorts of things. And it happens that in the kind of work that I do too, I come into contact with thousands of parents, or hundreds of parents in my case, but I know of thousands of parents who are in the same situation, sitting on their hands, too scared to call the authorities because they don't know what the outcome could be. Our CAT team, who are very, very effective people, cannot attend if there is agitation.
Of a threat of violence, yes.
The threat of violence, correct, which is understandable. It's totally understandable. If you call up a rehabilitation place like a Melbourne clinic or something like that that you have a referral for from your psychiatrist, they won't allow the person in until they interview them. So you're expecting a person who's going through a psychotic episode to make a phone call, to sit calmly over the phone, to answer a whole bunch of questions, and then to be told, well, we'll let you know when we've got a room.
Which could be?
Whenever. And
weeks,
we've waited weeks.
Months.
Months sometimes. All sorts of things. In our particular case, you know, we've had 10 years, effectively, since the beginning of all this kind of substance abuse, which has also brought on a lot of mental illness. With regard to that, we have visited many, many rehabilitation centres, many hospitals.
Tried everything.
And in speaking with different psychiatrists and things like that is where I guess that I realised that we need a better way to look at this. It doesn't currently work. I've sent letters. Actually, Mr. Kenlay was extremely helpful. I sent
former
him a letter.
Former police commissioner, yes.
That's right. He was very sympathetic to the situation and was kind enough to put me in touch with a lot of the ministers, and I sent them letters. Unfortunately, and again, what I received back were letters telling me how much money had been spent, but not really addressing the problem. What I do know, John, and this is not just my opinion, what I do know from the kind of work that I do and the parents that I come into contact with who send me their teens and tweens sometimes, there are literally thousands of families around the country sitting on their hands, living in hope that something good will come out of it, that somehow their child will stop using, too scared to call anybody for varying reasons. The first one being shame. The second one being, what if my child gets hurt, arrested, killed, or otherwise. So there are no avenues. And again, I'd like to really say that I'm not saying our government is wrong or the authorities are wrong or anything like that, but it just doesn't work and we need to address it.
So if you could tailor a service or whatever it is that you say is needed, what would it look like?
I've discussed this with a wonderful psychiatrist. I can't name them, because that would identify me, I guess. And I discussed this at length. And there is a way that we could have it be, unlike what is current now, where you might have somebody who's kind of trained in talking somebody down, but a very, very able medical practitioner in the area of mental illness who would come with the police.
Who may not be a doctor, maybe a nurse, a mental health nurse.
But yeah. Somebody who is very good.
Very experienced.
Yeah, and experienced in pretty much saying to the police officers, for example, look, it's okay, it's just a curtain rod. There's no need to pull your guns out. Let me talk to them, that kind of thing. And then for that person, for that young man or woman to be taken and to be put into a facility, whether it's against their will or not, but not necessarily to be charged, not necessarily to have a blot against their name or anything else like that.
So at the moment, it's either police if there is violence and they're not trained and equipped to do this,
that's
or
right.
It's a CAT team if there isn't violence. Yep. And yet you've got people who are sort of in between. They're not super aggressive or violent. They're more hurting themselves as much as anything. But you want a multidisciplinary approach is what
that's
you're
right.
calling for.
Like I don't want our police individuals to be harmed or otherwise.
No. And paramedics can't do this sort of work.
Paramedics
can't do this sort of work.
And I have, one of the many occasions, but on one particular occasion, I stood between the police and my son whilst he was going through a psychotic episode for over 2.5 hours.
You physically put yourself between them?
I physically stood in between them and kept showing the police officers texts from my son, a letter he had written to his mother on Mother's Day. This is a few years ago now, showing them what kind of person he truly is and that what they're seeing currently is not who he is. This is a young man who's having a psychotic episode who can't understand what's going on. All he sees is a threat, the way a person would see a threat when they're having a massive panic attack, you know? And I stood in between them. I begged them. I pleaded with them. I explained things. I guess I was fortunate that he wasn't shot or killed. He was sprayed with mace, of which I think it's called mace. I'm not sure, pepper spray, call it what you will. I was also sprayed with it accidentally, so I had the experience of what that feels like. They wanted to throw him into a divvy van. I again spoke to them and said, look, he's not well, please. They then allowed him to go into an ambulance. We went up to the hospital and he was treated. The point is that had somebody like me not have been there, then I'm sure that violence would have resulted, you know, and that means he wouldn't have deserved to die. He wouldn't have deserved to be hurt. And that's what we're facing. And this is what parents tell me on a daily basis, John, that they are too scared to call somebody for help because there are no avenues where this can actually result in something good. It's going to end in tears. And ultimately, what ends up, and visiting my son in jail, all I'm seeing is young men who are jailed and they are our future. And it's quite extraordinary. And without having the first-hand experience, if you had have told me this, I would have thought, really? It's really that bad? It's actually worse than I thought.
Of your two sons, one is now in prison.
Mm-hmm.
How's he going?
He's actually remarkable, I must say. He is remarkable.
It's not as if there aren't drugs in jail, so how's he responding to that
environment?
He's told
us about that. He has told us about that, how drugs are in jail. He has absolutely stayed away from it. He is working every day in jail. He exercises every day. He is reading. He is writing. Originally, my son was diagnosed with a particular condition, and he was also assessed as somebody with an IQ of in excess of 150. That brain is returning. And so what we've got is a young man who calls us at least twice a day from the prison. We visit him twice a week. We get nothing except concern from him. He has apologized so many times to us for what he's put us through.
So prison's actually helping him?
Prison has helped
him. It doesn't help a lot of people, but here's an example of one that it seems might even be responding.
It's helped, and I think why it's helped is we've had the fortunate ability to firstly get him represented properly, as in from the legal side of things. And that's been, you know, a big financial burden with regard to that. But the other reason is the extraordinary support he receives from both us and his broader family. Now, a lot of these young men don't have that kind of support. And I can guarantee you, and my son has told me time and time and time again, of how many people have been released and within a couple of months are back.
One of the things we've learned, Tony, is that organisations have sprung up, sometimes grassroots organisations have sprung up to deal with issues in the community. And the origins of, for instance, Beyond Blue are in exactly that, parents seeking peer support and then finding a great champion, which was former Premier Geoff Kennett, who elevated the organisation. And there's been example after example. Where do parents go? Where did you go to learn how the system works? How did you find out all the things you've found out?
We found out everything basically through personal trial and error.
The hard way.
The hard way. What you quickly come to grips with, as I'm sure any parent out there who's listening to this who might be in a similar situation where they're very concerned about their child sitting in their room currently, maybe hasn't slept for 2 or 3 days, is acting quite irrationally, and the parent is terrified of saying anything to them, so they stay out of their way. They call up somewhere, for example, Melbourne Clinic, which is a fantastic facility.
Private
some brilliant centre. Doctors.
Fee charging.
On the public purse. Now, we are privately health covered. As a result of that, we're fortunate. If you are in the public system, you don't have many options. There's a couple of hospitals that may have those kinds of wards, but again, to get into them is impossible based on waiting lists and based on the kind of referral. So the person has to literally be just about to either do harm to themselves or someone else in order to be fast-tracked. Now, that would also then involve police and, of course, the danger both to the individual and to the police. So it's kind of like you're in a rock and a hard place. That's really where it's at. And I'm not just saying that to be, you know, sensationalize the whole thing. It's not about that. It's about that, you know, my wife and I have some sophistication. We have some ability. We're very known in our community. You know, we know how to talk to people. We know how to get through the processes. And we couldn't do it. We couldn't do it. So there are parents out there languishing. And the only way we're going to sort of get past all this kind of thing is to recognize that the current way we do it doesn't work, that there's got to be a better way. And one of those ways is to set it up, to use some of that money that's being funded, that the government keeps telling us they're funding, into something that is actually workable, which actually looks at these young people as our future and not as somebody who's just being an idiot.
Or to be thrown on the scrap.
Yeah, and John, you know, forgive me, but look, when my son was being treated in hospital, for example, a very, very senior surgeon came up to me and he said, was it ice? And I said, yes, it was. And this is a surgeon who's very well-to-do, all that kind of stuff, obviously very intelligent, who sees us on a daily basis, says to me, actually put his arm around me and says to me, I have 4 wonderful children, 3 of whom are wonderful, but my eldest is expletive on ice, and there is nothing I can do. The arresting detective of my son said to me his eldest is also in the same boat. Sitting in court, in the magistrate's court, on countless times now, for both boys, we recognise certain magistrates have the same issue with their children. So this is not something that we can say only lives out in the western suburbs or any other suburb. This is across the board, and we don't actually recognise the extent of it, really. Like, really. And I remember you telling me a story about your own friends.
Let's leave that alone. Tony, not your real name. It takes a lot of guts to speak publicly about what's going on in your own family in such searingly honest ways. The response by text message I'll get to in a moment. Talk back as well, 1300 222 774. And after the news headlines, we'll have a chat to one of Australia's leading experts on exactly this kind of addictive behaviour and what can be done about it. But there's any number of text messages. Let's keep in touch and see what eventuates from it. Different people are making different suggestions. If something does come from this, whether it's even just a support organisation or an organisation that lobbies for reform, that in itself would be significant. But certainly thank you for getting in touch. It's been a very steep learning curve for many of us.
John, thank you very much for the opportunity. And I guess really why I'm here is to let people out there know that people are going through this. Maybe your neighbour, you're not alone. And there's got to be a better way. And again, it's not about that anybody's doing anything wrong who is trying to fix it. It's about that it doesn't work and we need to look at a different way. Thanks again.